It's time for the VolQuest podcast, where we dissect the biggest news items of the week.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome to the VolQuest podcast. I'm Eric Kane, alongside Austin Price and Brent Hubbs. A big thank you, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions. They've been doing it for 25 years. Since 1999, they've been East Tennessee's number one choice for roofing, siding, garage, windows, whatever that whatever the need is. You can contact Exterior Home Solutions today by picking up the phone and dialing 865-524-5888 or visiting them online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. All right, the regular season is over. Conference championship weekend is over. The college football playoff field is set. Tennessee gets in. Tennessee is the 9 seed. We will be on the road at 8 seed Ohio State. Immediate reactions from the news on Sunday. First, we'll go with Brent Hubbs.
Well, I think that's kind of what we all expected. Austin and I talked about this on the two-minute drill. There's a lot of things to dive into about the committee and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is this is kind of where you thought Tennessee would be. And that's fine. Go line up and play. Josh Heupel said it best. Anytime, anywhere, any place, you just line up and go play. I think the committee and the playoff structure has a lot of things it's got to fix. But it doesn't matter what that is. That's not for this year. So you go line up and play against an Ohio State team that was good for a lot of the season, Austin. They weren't good against Michigan. That's what all the Tennessee fans are leaning towards when they talk about Ohio State. But this is the same Ohio State team, lost by one at Oregon and won 10 regular season games. So it's not like this is a bad team. They're very talented.
Very talented, but they've been susceptible to playing down. I mean, this is a team that was getting pushed by Nebraska at the Shoe, and then the following week, Nebraska lost at home to UCLA. So, I mean, like, they've had these moments where they kind of, go into a little bit of a lull. Now, when they put it all together, they're fantastic. And so you're going to have, if you're Ryan Day, 3 weeks to poke, prod, motivate, and try to, get this team going in the right direction. And, again, this is a team I think skill versus skill Tennessee matches up with pretty decent. Like, I mean, I said it with you, on the two-minute drill, or as Eric called it, the 15-minute drill afterwards. I thought Tennessee matchup for matchup, secondary versus what is a great group of wide receivers for Ohio State, is much better than – I just don't know who Tennessee would have had guard the kid, the Warren kid from Penn State. Like, the really talented tight end who's just a beast. So, Tennessee offensive line for Ohio State versus Tennessee's defensive line, I think that's a win for Tennessee. Ohio State's beat up a little bit. Obviously, they lost McLaughlin. It's some change of tackle. I think there's some spots where Tennessee can exploit a very talented Ohio State team.
Yeah, kind of what Austin said. I mean, I think it's good on good in a lot of areas. Ohio State is very talented a wide receiver. I mean, there's a couple NFL guys there for sure. Tennessee, Jermaine McCoy, Ricky Gibson, you like those matchups. Tennessee is really good running the football. Ohio State is really good defending the run. These teams kind of mirror each other in a number of different ways, but going back on one of the last things you said there, Austin, I completely agree. I think it's early in the week, and we'll see how health-wise, Ohio State gets between now and kickoff, and we'll speak with Spencer Holbrook here in a couple of moments and get his thoughts on this. Where they are on the offensive line, specifically at center, of course, that is a massive loss, but they're having to shuffle the deck a little bit and rotate some guys in. What an opportunity there for Tennessee's defensive line to get after it. We said the same thing going into Georgia. I know that. But what an opportunity for Tennessee to set the tone defensively in this game up front with your best units and try to get your best foot forward in a game that's going to be a hostile environment.
Well, and I think it's about, when you talk about this matchup, everybody wants to know, where's Ohio State at the quarterback position from a productive standpoint? How effective are they there? I think that's been the challenges for Ohio State that's created the inconsistencies offensively is just the inconsistent play at the quarterback position and how, can Tennessee keep him out of rhythm? Can they not allow him to get going like they did Carson Beck? That's Tennessee's challenge. And when he has struggled, then Ohio State's had a hard time moving the ball on a consistent basis. So I think that's the biggest key to this game. When you talk about Tim Banks' defense versus Ohio State's offense.
Well, as you said, he's either been really good or, I mean, like the fact that he's a statue back there, I think definitely helps Tennessee. If they can kind of, you know, push the pocket at all and create, you know, some consternation in the backfield, I think that's where, you know, this game could, you know, really turn for Tennessee defensively.
Ohio Stadium seats over 102,000 folks. Tennessee is going to have 3,500 ticket allotment. The secondary markets are going to be popping. It is going to be obviously a huge home field advantage, which is the way this thing was set up, obviously, you know, for the first round of the playoffs. Tennessee, of course, has not played well on the road all the time under Josh Heupel. Got off to a great start at Georgia, didn't finish the way it needs to. How big of a talking point or how big of an issue is this going to be for Tennessee to go on the road and win a big game in the college football playoffs?
I think we'll hear all about it, aren't you, Hubbard? I mean, Tennessee, no, they've not been able to win a big game. Now they won at night at Lexington. They won at night at Oklahoma. Some Alabama didn't do this year. But like, you know, their biggest road win under the Josh Heupel regime is at LSU in 11 a.m. kickoff. This is going to be 8 o'clock in December at the Shoe. It's going to be loud. All those Ohio fans are going to have a chance to get feeling good all day long. So, I mean, it's going to be a tough environment. But, again, put the ball down and go play. And I think that's the best thing that Josh Heupel has done is establish the mindset of the team, of the staff for the last week, which is, you know, just any place, anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I think the two biggest storylines are going to be non-controllable storylines, right? You can't control what happened in the past on the road. Okay, those are previous teams. Those are previous experiences. Yeah, you got off to a good start here. You didn't get off to a good start there. Or, you know, there's going to be talk about Tennessee playing after a week off or after a layoff because they haven't been great in those settings. Then you're going to have the weather conversation. I mean, those are going to be the storylines that you're going to hear about over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, I think for Tennessee, it's truly an us against the world type deal. And I think that's the way Tennessee should play it. If you're a competitor, you should thrive in those, you know, situations. And Tennessee should go in there with a chip on their shoulder. You know, I think it'll be a rocking atmosphere. But, I mean, it's an Ohio State fan base. It's pretty frustrated with this Ohio State football team. Now, can they reset and get ready for the playoffs? I mean, they should, you know, because remember, I mean, you're setting the tone in the first game for the playoff run. And then what Ryan Day said, I mean, you know, it's like you got to go win the football game. And so can Tennessee create some doubt and kind of silence that crowd that, you know, maybe wants to say, here we go again, or, oh, my gosh, I'm tired of this team. I'm tired of this. I mean, that's Tennessee's challenge coming into this game.
I will say this, and it's easy for me to say. I've never been to a game there. I don't think any of us have. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, how many people were talking about, oh, man, Oklahoma at night, it's going to be tough. And you get in there, and after we left, you're like, it wasn't that big of a deal. Like, I mean, what is Ohio State going to be like? Maybe it's louder than anything in the SEC, or maybe it's not. Like, we don't know. We've not been a part of it. And you can't talk to the Ohio State people. They're just judging off of what they know at Ohio State.
The same way we would, yeah.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, like, you know, to me, that's a big thing for me is, like, you know, just because it's 102,000 doesn't mean the you know, noise just sets down in there on them, you know? I mean, I'm interested to kind of see what the atmosphere's like.
Well, and I think if you're Josh Heupel, don't make a thing if it's not a thing, right? I mean, like, just go play. I mean, you don't know. I mean, just line up and go play in there and go play wherever you're supposed to go play in a parking lot, in a stadium where there's basically none of your fans there, whether it's cold, whether it's daylight, dark, windy, whatever, just go play. And I think that's the mindset that you have to have. I think that's the mindset this program has to continue to work to build. Just put the ball down and go play wherever against whoever at whatever time.
Tennessee and Ohio State in the college football playoffs. We're going to be previewing it from every single angle over the course of the next 2 weeks leading up to kickoff. We'll have Spencer Holbrook on from the Ohio State side here in just a moment. But real quick, before we get to Spencer, Megan, if you have the graphic, or if you have the bracket, throw it up there. If you don't, I'm sorry. But I want to get you guys' thoughts on this bracket. This separate conversation. You can only control what you control. Go line up and play. I get all that. But you look at this college football playoff bracket, and oh my goodness, man, this is why it's got to change in the future. Look at Boise State's draw. I mean, goodness gracious, you get SMU or Penn State, okay? Look at Oregon, the number one ranked team in this whole field. Your consolation in the Rose Bowl, well, you're going to get, or your winner in the Rose Bowl, you're going to get Tennessee or Ohio State. Arizona State gets to you know, the 12th ranking, but they get a bye. I mean, all that, I mean, I'm just saying the obvious here. All that's got to change. They've got to change who gets the byes in the future, obviously. But I mean, or if I'm an Oregon fan right now, I'm so upset because, you know, I'm going to get Tennessee or Ohio State, whereas a Boise State could potentially get an SMU. SMU's had a great year, but in my opinion, SMU is not Ohio State or Tennessee.
That's why you're going to see this thing grow, Hubber. It's going to go from, I bet you it's 16 in 2026.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's got to grow. I think the other thing you do have to do is you've got to fix this conference, you know, the conference bye deal. If you're a conference champion, you should be in the field, but that doesn't mean you get a bye. I think you put them in your field just like you would the NCAA tournament. If you win the SoCon, you're in. Okay, but that doesn't mean you get to play close to home or you get a great, you know, a great draw or whatever in the basketball field. Get your teams that are in. Once you figure out who's in, then you redraw the brackets, okay? And that includes taking Notre Dame out of this. You know, you can't be higher than six because you're not in a conference deal. You put, if it's a 12-team field, 16-team field, whatever it is, you line them up and you put them out there and then you slot them based on their seeding, not based on, hey, you get a week off because you won your conference or whatever. I mean, again, it's just a moving target. It's a moving target every year. It's a moving target every week, you know, and that's the maddening thing. And I've talked about it. You know, there's a human element here. My frustration with the human element is the target's always changing. Okay. A year ago, the injury situation was the storyline in there. At no point yesterday was Georgia's situation ever discussed. Now, I know they get the bye because they won, okay? But, I mean, should they be ahead of Boise State given where their quarterback situation is? I mean, that quote, wrist injury, that now is an elbow injury, which we all knew it was not a wrist injury at the half. And what does Georgia look like, you know, at quarterback now? What do they look like on offense? And, listen, I know Gunnar Stockton came in and let him do a scored and drive. And he threw
me on this. I'm with you.
You know, he threw a pass to Oscar Delp, and Delp made a great play. But then in the fourth quarter, they didn't throw the ball 5 yards down the field. I mean, everything was sideways because the one deep throw he threw, it was an interception. So what are they look like there? I mean, I just think none of those facts – 1 year it's a factor, the next year it's not a factor. 1 week it's a factor, the next week it's not a factor.
Strength of schedule will 100% be a focal point at some point in the future, but it wasn't this year.
But here's the thing.
Yeah, as it should be.
Look, I said this last time on The Nation. Like, what was the knee-jerk reaction yesterday from Greg Byrne and other ADs? Well, we'll see how we schedule. Well, when the current committee rotates off and the new committee comes on, who's to say they don't flip it back to where you got to play somebody? Like, where it all of a sudden becomes a factor. And then ADs have scheduled, and it's not like high school where you just kind of schedule, you know, every 2 years. You're normally projecting and scheduling out. Like, all of a sudden, what was, you know, the rules 5 years ago when you booked not having anybody, now is flipped and you need somebody. Like, that's where it, to me, gets really super flawed.
Well, I think that part is there. I think the other thing, too, with strength of schedule is, obviously, they ignored it this year really completely all the way through. I think it's got to be a greater emphasis when the rankings first come out. Like, Texas was ranked too high in the initial ranking because they didn't factor in their strength of schedule. And so what happens is Texas, there was no way they were going to fall very far because you weren't going to punish the conference champion, loser. And so now all of a sudden you backed yourself in a corner where you can't move people very much because you're not going to punish them because you don't want to diminish or make it to where nobody wants to play in a conference championship game. It's like Nick Saban said it best, like, SMU was too high going into the ACC game. Much, you know, that game against Clemson should have been a play-in game when you look at their schedule. And I know we talked about this yesterday.
Good grief. But
I mean, they were ranked too high. So you're sitting there, well, if they lose, you can't knock them out. You can't make them fall that far. Well, if they're 11th, you know, then okay, they're out if they lose to Clemson. Now, listen, I think SMU played well. I got no problem with SMU being in the field. Okay, the same way I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for Ole Miss and Alabama for not getting in the field because you didn't take care of your business, right? It's not like the elite beat up on the elite in this league. I mean, Ole Miss, Alabama, those teams lost to 6-6 teams and 4-8 teams, and that's what ultimately cost you a spot in the bracket. But the bracket itself and the way the process goes about has to be more uniform year in and year out, and they've got to tweak some things, particularly with the seeding process.
With Burns' comment specifically, it's like he's crying wolf yesterday because, again, you look at Alabama's schedule this year, their losses came to bad teams on the road, Oklahoma.
And in league play.
Yeah, in league play, Vanderbilt. And, of course, Tennessee's not a bad loss. But your murderer's row non-conference was Western Kentucky, South Florida, Mercer, and the 12th team ranked in the Big Ten.
And, by the way, I heard somebody say on the
TV. Penn State's best win, by the way.
I mean, I heard somebody say, I guess the week before, maybe it was Ward Manuel talked about, well, Alabama got a good win over Mercer or something to that effect. Like, I mean,
he said they played well against Mercer. So would Jeff County's JV team, right? I mean, come on. Like,
I do think that there's a real, and I know we're going to get to a guess here. There's a real shift here that's really interesting. From a scheduling standpoint, one, the SEC should never go to 9 games under this current, the way it's set up, should never go there, Austin. Then you get into the deal of you got to raise all this money to pay people, right? And to pay rev share and all those things. Can you get the season ticket numbers you want if you're playing Chattanooga and Kent State and UTEP at home?
And that's the balance.
Okay. But if you're going to schedule quality teams at home and homes, which you're a big advocate for, AP, and I don't disagree with you, to where the ticket value is worth more to the fan, then your expectation for your head coach has to be diminished some, right? I mean, like, are you going? It's like the old basketball schedule for years when it was about 20 wins, right? Do you schedule for 20 wins, or do you schedule a schedule that's appealing to the fans? Which one are you going to do? I think football's at a little bit of that point right now. If the strength of schedule factor is not going to be a hard, absolute factor every year, regardless of who's on the committee.
Yeah, and, you know, let's face it. I mean, why would you go to 9 teams too? Like, I mean, like you mentioned, like if you change the automatic bids, Notre Dame's going to be, but like Notre Dame doesn't play anybody. Like if you look at their schedule, it's just like, I mean, who did they beat all year? Their best win's at 8-4, Texas A&M team.
That's one quirk about this system that I like, that they can't get an automatic bye. I think it's funny. Join a conference.
100%. Yeah, I think they should just be forced to join a conference, and then they can be the one seed. If they earn it, they earn it. And I think that's the biggest thing is, like, you have teams that have earned a bye, you know, by being one of the top two or three teams in the country, but they're second in their, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the last several years, what happened? Powell and West would play each other in the quarterfinals, and that was basically the de facto state championship game in 5A in the state of Tennessee. Those people that aren't Tennessee residents. And so, like, you know, you might have had the second best team in the state, but you got put out in the quarters. I mean, same thing here. Like, these teams that, you know, maybe are the second best team or third best team in the country, but they're second in their own conference, you know, they have a much, you know, I don't know, in Penn State's case, an easier path. But you know, that's why it's so flawed. I mean, who did Notre Dame beat? They beat an 8-4 Texas A&M team, who's a good quality win on the road. That's tough atmosphere. Kudos to them. That was a nice win. The worst loss of anybody, Northern Illinois. Purdue was a 1-win football team. Miami, just look at it. They played.
But here's the thing. I'm with you. Okay, join the conference. They're obviously not going to join the conference because financially it doesn't make sense. But if strength of schedule is a real factor, then that would eliminate them from being the number one team in the country and the number one seed in the country because their strength of schedule is not high enough. Like, that's the thing that has to be. Everybody's talking about, well, schedules are out of balance. Nobody's playing equal team. All that's 100% right, which means strength of schedule is more important than any other factor because that's the one variable that can balance out what the Big Ten schedule looks like versus the SEC schedule versus an independent schedule like Notre Dame versus the Big 12 or whoever else. That's the one common denominator is strength of schedule. I mean, like, Boise State's strength of schedule is not very good. Okay, well, then factor that in.
It's like Miami. Miami, Cam Ward can cry all he wants, but at the end of the day, their best win is over Florida, a team that, you know, if they played right now, I'm not sure you would take Miami to beat Florida. I think it would be super close. Florida's a different football team. But, you know, the losses they had late in the year to Georgia Tech and Syracuse, and Syracuse is a good football team, and Georgia Tech was an overachieving football team, you know, still just didn't play in a while.
Once again, I mean, I think it's strength. Because you can't, Eric, you can't put into factor, okay, what is it like when you play four straight weeks in the SEC versus four straight weeks in the ACC? There's no metric for that, okay? You can't put that in a computer and come out with anything. But for analytics and metrics, you can put in strength of schedule, and it will spit you out a number, and it will slot where teams are supposed to be. They ignored, for the most part, that factor throughout their entire seeding of teams in the with this playoff committee, which is why Texas was too high to begin with, and some of those things factoring in.
And Ohio State, if you just judge them off, they never wanted to put Penn State below them because they didn't want to punish the conference championship participants. But I mean, if you just look at their resumes, you know, you beat them head to head. They've got the win over Indiana. Again, Penn State, their best win was over Wisconsin.
Yeah. So we'll see. Strength of schedule is certainly going to be a talking point. Will it be next year? Will it be the next couple of years? We'll see. But it certainly wasn't this year. But I think it's reason to believe with the committee chairs changing over as frequently as they do that it will be. And so I think, you know, getting all these Mercer games and non-con might not be the best strategy moving forward. I'm not saying build up with a couple of different Power Four teams, but I would still have a marquee Power Four matchup in my schedule for years to come. That's just me.
Well, for finances, you have to, and I know we got to get going. I think the other thing you got to look at is how long are you going to do terms for the committee? Are you going to rotate it this frequently where it's a moving target all the time? Or do you get a little more stability on the committee so you know kind of what they're looking for every year? Now, I don't think you should ever have a sitting AD as the head of the committee, okay? Because I just think that's wrong. But do you put some people on that committee for a five-year term and, you know, you get a little more stability with what you're doing as opposed to the rotation that you're doing now?
Could it be like they do at my HOA? Like, you know, the president's a one-year term, the vice president's a two-year term, and, you know, you have different lengths of terms. So
what are you running?
Stability.
I think the one concern is, I mean, you have people turning over every year, and so – if you're the new guy who comes in and you want to do this, that, the other, well, there's nine people that say, well, this is how we've done it the last 2 years. And it's my last year on the committee, so this is how we'll do it here. You don't really have a voice in terms of what we're looking at. Now, I don't know how all those work in there, but I think that you got to look at some of how the committee's set up as well.
We're going to chat with Spencer Holbrook of Letterman Row when we come back to get a look at Ohio State. Of course, Tennessee's going to be on the road at Ohio State in the first round of the college football playoffs. But first, let's get a word from our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby.
Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Hey, this is Travis Thompson, one of the new owners at North Lake Boat Store in La Follette, Tennessee. Love to have you come up and check out our Christmas sale. We have 50% off on all of our stuff in the pro shop. We carry Ranger, StarCraft. You can find us online at northlakeboatstore.com or on Facebook at North Lake Boat Store. Happy holidays.
Hey, everybody, let me tell you about our friends over at Prize Picks. It's the daily fantasy sports platform in America, the largest in North America, and it is so much fun where you can win so much of your money back when all you have to do is pick more than or less than the projected stat value of what it offers right there. 1,000-time payouts, the game has changed with your lineups at Prize Picks. You now have the ability to win up to 1,000 times your money, the highest payout ever at Prize Picks. It's available right now. Plus, you already know about the 2, the 3, the 4 pick power plays. Again, it's between 2 and 6. But let us introduce you to the next level. You can now craft power plays with up to 6 player projections involved live and on the board now. December means it's the season of giving, right? The only One way to celebrate is here at Price Picks with Picksmas. Follow along with us on this holiday season for free picks, discounts, free lineups, and so much more coming to you all throughout the month of December. Plus, if you are a new user, keep pushing the you've got this new user promo where you play $5, you get 50 and instantly win or lose by putting that promo code VQ. Again, new users, play $5 in lineups, get $50 instantly when you put in the promo code VQ. That's not bad, right? Win 1,000 times your money back today and make it all so much fun this holiday season. That's at Price Picks, the largest DFS platform in North America, and where you can get $50 instantly by playing $5 in lineups by putting in the promo code VQ. That's at PricePicks.com. As always, a big thank you to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions, local and trusted since 1999. Want to welcome on the show here on the VolQuest podcast, Spencer Holbrook of Letterman Row. He covers Ohio State for the On3 Network and, of course, Tennessee and Ohio State. Pretty big football game coming up week after next. Spencer, thanks so much for the time, man. How you doing?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, just instant reactions. I know the bracket came out Sunday afternoon. You saw the matchup. Ohio State's going to host Tennessee. What were your instant reactions and kind of the vibe of the Ohio State fan base in terms of this matchup and as they get Tennessee?
The vibe of the fan base. We'll touch on that in a little bit. I'm thrilled about this game. It's going to be awesome. You look at all those matchups in the first round. This one is the marquee match. Of course, it is because they put it at 8 p.m. But to get these two brands on the field, Power T and the Block O, on the same field is going to be just awesome. For the first time, I think, since, what, 96 in that Citrus Bowl. So, like, to get these two on the field together, to get these two fan bases that are kind of supercharged in their own way, in their own conference, together, I'm really excited about it. And then from a fan perspective, like, it's still a little bit of that hangover effect from the upset loss to Michigan. They've had a long time to stew on it. There's a lot of consternation in the fan base, but now that the matchup is set, you're starting to see this fan base turn toward, all right, let's get on the road, let's get on our way here, let's get this home game. It's going to be rocking in the horseshoe. It's going to be awesome. And let's go try to win a national championship, because you can't beat Michigan again, and you can't play Michigan again. So you might as well get over it, look forward to the future, and try to beat Tennessee.
Spencer, do you think for players, it's an easy flush and wash of Michigan, and it's for the fans, it's a lot harder to deal with. And so from a perspective of preparing for this game and the Michigan hangover for the program, it's probably non-existent, right?
Yeah. I mean, I say this all the time. We say it on the Letterman Lounge message board, like, fans are not nearly as resilient as players. Like, fans want to be mad at all times. Like, if you're not winning every game, you got a mad fan base. And if you're not Nick Saban in Alabama, you got a mad fan base. So, you know, you might as well just move on and get on with it. You're going to play for a national championship. And every game from here on out, you got to win four of them. So if you can win four games, you win the national championship. And if you win the national championship, nobody cares about that Michigan game that you lost that specific year. Now, next November, they'll care again. They'll yell at Ryan Day again. But, you know, if he adds a national championship to the lobby at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, nobody's going to, you know, complain that they didn't beat Michigan that year. They're going to celebrate the national championship, and we'll see you at the parade. So, you know, that's the thing here. It's like, the program is moving forward. The program is finding solutions to what went wrong against Michigan. The fan base is still trying to figure out why things went wrong against Michigan. So I think that's the biggest difference here, because the program is all eyes toward Tennessee.
When you look at this Ohio State team, Spencer, what do you feel like, you know, they've got to clean up coming off of the Michigan game, to kind of get back to doing what they do well?
I think it's guard play. The offensive line has been, well, the first six games, it was ridiculously good. It's the reason that they were a semifinalist for the Joe Moore Award. They were very, very good. And then Josh Simmons went down with a knee injury in that Oregon game. He lost for the season. He's going to go to the NFL now. And then the week of the Indiana game, Seth McLaughlin, former Alabama center, now a finalist for the Remington Award. He was the heart and soul of this offensive line, went down with his own season-ending injury in practice. So they moved a lot of pieces around. They're still moving pieces around. They're trying to find out what's going to work best for them. They were, quite frankly, not up to par against this Michigan front. Those are two of the best defensive tackles in the country. The tackles on the offensive side are pretty good for Ohio State, and that's where I think the matchup, you know, is going to be decided, James Pierce against these tackles. But as far as guard play, they've got to be better, you know, in that front three, in the middle of that offensive line, if they're going to have success, because they want to run the ball. They want Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins to dictate terms. If the offensive line allows them to, those guys are really good at dictating terms and getting into the open field when they're in the open field, they're really hard to bring down. As you guys know, with Judkins from his time at Ole Miss, like he's a brute to bring down. So, you know, if they can get that front three and that offensive line figured out, I think they're going to have some success. But if they go in and Tennessee has success in the teeth of that offensive line, I think it's going to be a long night for Ohio State.
Spence, you look at these two teams, and it's almost like they kind of mirror each other in similar ways, right? You've got quarterback that can make some plays. You rely on a run game. Defensively is kind of your bread and butter. Tennessee's defense is fantastic. Ohio State's defense is fantastic. It looks like a big battle in a number of different areas, right? You got Tennessee's cornerbacks with Jermaine McCoy and Ricky Gibson. McCoy might be an All-American this year, going up against a lot of NFL receivers for Ohio State and Smith and Tate and a couple of those other guys. I mentioned the run game versus the run game. The rush defense for Ohio State and Tennessee, very similar in terms of stats. Do you feel like this is kind of good on good in a number of different ways, and it's kind of poised for two teams who are really similar to go at it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take the under, guys, because these defenses are awesome. I love the Tennessee pass rush. I also really like the ways that Jim Knowles gets this Ohio State pass rush involved here, especially late in the season after they didn't get much pressure against Oregon. I love the Tennessee back end, the way that they manipulate the quarterbacks, and McCoy is just a fantastic player. And, you know, him against Jeremiah Smith would be box office stuff, or him against Carnell Tate, no matter who he's on, because these are NFL receivers, it's going to be a great matchup. And then you flip it to the other side, Tennessee's front against Ohio State's run game. Like, it is in a lot of ways good on good. These teams are very similar, like you said, and that makes it to where, you know, first of all, I didn't really understand the spread except for the home field type of deal. But also, like, these two teams just seem so similarly matched. And, you know, whoever – it's really one of those things. Whoever has the better game plan, whoever executes better, is going to come out on top. And early in this two-week stretch here, you better be getting your game plan in order, and you better have it set, because you're going to need to rep it a lot. Because these two teams, and especially these two defenses, I don't think give you any free yards. And that's the thing that stands out the most about both of these units. It's like, you want free yards, look elsewhere, because the defenses are not going to give it to you. And that's what makes it intriguing. It's like, whoever can get those extra yards, those hidden yards, and those bonus yards is probably going to win.
Spencer, when you look at Ohio State at the quarterback position, I know there's been a lot of talk about Will Howard. There's good Will Howard. There's been bad Will Howard. I'm sure part of that's because of that interior offensive line. What do you make of kind of where he is, and what is key for him to be successful? What is it that he has to do to get a 60-minute game in the way that he needs to play for Ohio State to win football games in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's why the Michigan game was so weird, Brent, is because he was so good all year. And then he gets the deep in his own territory interception, sets up Michigan on a 2-yard touchdown drive with that interception. He throws another one in the red zone, where Ohio State has been almost 100% in the red zone this year, and that's because of him. He adds the run element, where he doesn't do it often, but he also does it enough where you have to respect it. He, he loves to throw. He's not great off platform, but he's not bad on the run. If you get him out in space, he can beat you in a variety of ways. He's really good when his feet are truly set. And I think that's the biggest deal. It's like, even when he's on the run, like, if he gets to his spot and can get rid of the ball, he can zip it. But if you got him, you know, flushed a little bit or flustered at all, that's where he gets a little, you know, shaky. You know, that throw against Penn State, the pick six, he didn't look like he was set, even though that was a very set throw. The throws against Michigan, he looks like he's got some pressure in the interior there. That's where he throws a bad ball. You know, he floats a little bit of the deep ball sometimes. It's not the most ideal deep ball for this Ohio State offense. So, you know, it's like you said, good Will Howard, bad Will Howard. We've seen much, much more of the good Will Howard, but, you know, we almost say that there's one a game where he just has one of those throws a game where it's like, well, that's what you're getting with the full Will Howard experience. He's going to have to be really good in this playoff, because it's going to be one on the margins. I think he's got that in him, but, you know, from what we saw against Michigan, that was really shaky, and it's a little bit concerning. But then you look and you rely on the other 11 games of the sample size, and he was really good, especially, if I can add, especially in the Oregon game. Everybody looks at that last slide and the way that game ended. Will was an 80% passer against Oregon. He had over 300 yards passing. He was nails up until that exact moment. And, like, yeah, that last play cannot be ignored, dismissed, whatever. But, like, he and Dylan Gabriel were going at it. And he was at his best when Ohio State needed him to be. He just ran out of time by 1 second. That's why they didn't get to kick that field goal. So you've seen more good than bad, but certainly, you know, you're going to get one a game where you're like, Will, what were you doing there, man?
you hope isn't, you know, resulting in the ban plan for the other team. You look at the fan base. You talked about him earlier. Kirk Herbstreit referenced it yesterday, on the selection show about maybe they needed, the road game to kind of get away from the booing on third down. When they don't get a third down, they get a punt and that type of thing. Ryan Day was asked about that, and I thought he gave a pretty good answer. I mean, let's face it. I mean, there's groans at every stadium across America, including Tennessee's, when you don't score on every possession. Kind of where's this thing at? Obviously you have a chance to flip it here. If you can go on this and let's face it, if Ohio State wins the national title, it'll be the juggernaut of teams to get to that point with the path that both they and Tennessee have. But where's this whole thing at with Ryan Day and Ohio State and the fan base and all that?
Yeah, I would say the temperature is definitely warm, and I don't think they're really running away from that. The key for Ryan Day is going to be to embrace it, because if he starts to turtle up or shell up about this thing, it's going to go sideways in a hurry, and they'll probably lose to Tennessee. But if he comes out and embraces a little bit of the heat that he's under right now, like, hey, you better win a couple games here in the college football playoff, or we're going to have some really tough conversations, because – they make it the goal, and we go over to Indianapolis for Big Ten Media Day every single July. He makes it the goal, and he states it very clearly. You have to beat Michigan, you have to win the Big Ten, you have to win the national championship. Those are the three goals at Ohio State. Well, if he loses in any part of this college football playoff, he's 0-3 in each of the last 4 years. That's 0-12. And usually when you're 0-12, you get benched. Well, you know what benching is for him. So, like, that's the thing here. It's like he understands the heat. And I thought yesterday, like you said, was a good example of him, like, okay, like, we know what we're up against. We know that the draw is worse for us because we didn't take care of business, especially against Michigan, because even if they lost to Oregon, if they would have beat Michigan, if they lost to Oregon, they're probably like the 5 or the 6. The path is easier. So they made this bed. Now they've got to lie in it. And I think it's best for him to just embrace the little bit of heat that he's under, because if they lose this game, like I said, the attention and the heat is going to be very clearly on the very top of the program. That's with him. So we'll see. But so far, so good. I think he's kind of embracing it and understanding what he's up against here, because the heat's not going away unless they're lifting a trophy in Atlanta in a month and a half.
Spencer, last one, man, then we'll say goodbye. I know you and I are going to do some collabs here over the next couple of weeks and throw some stories back and forth. But I do want to get your thoughts on Tennessee fans, making the trip. And Tennessee fans are making the trip. What should they expect in Columbus? Where should they go? What should they check out? What should they eat? What's the environment going to be like at the Shoe? I think we're all expecting it to be, awesome, but none of us have ever covered a game there. So what advice or what could you tell Tennessee fans who are planning on making the trip to expect?
Yeah, I think Ohio State fans are going to be really friendly, because it's going to be a very electric atmosphere. I think Tennessee fans should expect that, first of all. There's a lot of Columbus is an incredibly underrated food city. I'm gonna send you guys over a list, whether you want to publish it or not. I'll give you guys a full breakdown of where you guys need to eat, drink, things like that, where to grab a beer, all of that stuff. The skull session is 2 to 2.5 hours before the game. It's at the old basketball arena right across the street from the football stadium. It's a really cool event. The band comes in, then the whole football team comes in. Some of the coaches and players give like a little bit of like a 2-minute address, get the crowd riled up, and then they walk over to the stadium. Obviously, Script Ohio, be in your seats a little early, because it is – I get goosebumps every time still, just because it is something that, like, you don't take for granted. It's one of the best traditions for a reason. I hope there aren't that many Tennessee fans there, to be honest, because I'd like to see Ohio State blow the thing out. But I've seen already over on the generals' quarters that y'all are going to be traveling in droves. So it should be fun. I'm really excited for this. I will give you guys one. Land Grant Brewing is a staple here in Columbus. Great beer. They usually have a food truck out there. Friends with the folks over there. It's really good stuff. So that's stop number one. But like I said, I'll send over a full list of where to eat and drink in Columbus. And then obviously you got to be at the Horseshoe all day, because I think that tailgate scene is going to be out of this world.
Should be a good one. Tennessee and Ohio State, of course, that's coming up on Saturday, December the 21st, 8 o'clock on ESPN ABC, and we're looking forward to that. And, of course, both these sites, VolQuest and Letterman Row, going to be previewing it from every single angle, every step of the way. Spencer, appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, that is going to do it here for this edition of the VolQuest podcast. Big thanks, as always, to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. They've been doing it since 1999, East Tennessee's number one source. Number one trusting source for roofing, siding, garage, windows, whatever the case may be, since 1999. That phone number for a free estimate is 865 524-5888 or online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. For Austin Price, Brent Hubbs, I am Eric Kane. Thank you as always for joining us here on the BallQuest Podcast.
You've been listening to the BallQuest Podcast every week here on BallQuest.